Radiotopia from PRX.
I'm excited to tell you that one of our favorite Radiotopia siblings, Ear Hustle, is back with a new season. Ear Hustle is a show about life inside prison, but it's not your typical prison podcast. Co-hosts Nigel Poor and Erlon Woods have recently been spending time at four California prisons and have a season's worth of funny, surprising, and unforgettable stories to share. In a recent episode, they were able to visit a groundbreaking prison hospice where they spoke to men who are grappling with the reality of dying inside prison. Also coming up this season are stories about the objects people keep inside their prison cells, complicated mom-daughter relationships in prison, and incarcerated people who wonder whether they've become too comfortable behind bars. Stories about life on the inside, told by those who live it. Find Ear Hustle wherever you get your podcasts.
February 14th, 1998.
Sixth grade.
Dear diary.
Dear Jesus.
Dear sweet asswad.
Adults sharing the embarrassing things
they created as kids.
So I wrote poems about masturbation.
Before an audience
of total strangers.
I feel like an idiot.
I'm the only normal one in my entire family.
Mom, you can't read this.
These are the stories hidden inside
the pages of our past.
Welcome to the Mortified Podcast. I'm Neil, and today's episode peeks inside the teenage journals of Steve Sachs, who told us his childhood obsessions included rooftop tanning, coin collecting, and rolling his R's in Spanish class. Now, in high school, Steve desperately wanted to reinvent himself, but as you're about to hear, he didn't pursue that by trying to learn guitar or going out for the football team. Instead, he decided to travel thousands of miles from everything and everyone he knew. Here's Steve reading his travel journals on stage at Mortified in Brooklyn, 2014.
My name is Steve, and I attended a small preppy private high school outside of Chicago. There I was a mediocre student and an ungifted athlete. I also had a twin brother who's here tonight. Anyway, hardly anyone could tell us apart. So I was always in search of something that would make me stand out. Then in 10th grade, a group came to my Spanish class to recruit volunteers for Amigos de las Americas. This was a program that sent high school students throughout Latin America to do public health projects. I realized that this was my opportunity. Especially when they mentioned that a local student had just won the coveted Amigo of the Year award, and he'd been interviewed on the local TV news. I vowed to become the next Amigo of the Year. You know, I wanted to think at the time that at least part of my motivation for doing Amigos was altruistic, that I had some penchant for helping those less fortunate. But this was not the case. I really cared only about myself. Then I got my assignment for the summer. I was going to one of the remotest areas of Mexico to dig latrines. June 15th, 1979. I consider myself a very special person. Someone who won't sell out just to make a lot of money, who will help the world's poor and underprivileged. I have this picture in my mind of me being famous, maybe winning the Nobel Peace Prize, and it making my entire family uncomfortable to be around me. June 17th. We went to this place to eat goat intestines with tortillas. It was a scuzzy meal. But we had been told in training to be culturally sensitive. My goal is to be the most culturally sensitive amigo in the entire program and to win the Amigo of the Year award. We returned to our auditorium to learn how to build latrines and to discuss the Amigos' rules, which are very strict. June 18th. Today we were alone with Mexican men who thought we knew what we were doing. But the truth was, I was sleeping through most of the lectures. We knew from the notes that the latrines had to be 15 meters away from water and 5 meters away from a house, but I didn't really know how long a meter was. June 19th. I tossed and turned all night. At 4:30 a.m., I couldn't stand it anymore. I stood up and practically took a shit on the spot. I put on clothes and tore to the nearest place, which was in front of someone's house. Boy, was I sick. I've never been more miserable. June 21st. I'm waiting for Catholic Mass to start. These people hate anyone who isn't Catholic, so we're Catholic. Susan told me that the people here think Jews are evil and have a tail and small horns. How come nobody likes Jews? I feel it was unfair to be born Jewish. June 25th. Jake and I were talking about having sex with the women around here. And he mentioned Doña Rosa's daughter, the foxiest Mexican woman I've seen yet. He told me she wants me so bad, she's dripping inside her panties. But it's an amigo's rule that no one can have any amorous contact. And to Doña Rosa's daughter, no less, as I am a top candidate for the Amigo of the Year Award, I will not break this rule. Billy and I then went to see Doctora Josefat. What began as an explanation of the Jeep incident turned into a conversation about sex, relaciones sexuales, abortion, el aborto, and contraception, anticonceptivos. It was a fascinating discussion. My Spanish was incredible. Thank you. And the doctora thought I was very bright. Further evidence that the Mexican women are all very horny. Later, I heard the sound of basketball. They had a dirt court with crooked rims. I showed them all my around the back, between the legs layup, and I had a huge audience. They couldn't believe it. I loved it. June 25th, later that day. I slept in a cot with Lori, who's pretty foxy. And I don't know how it happened, but we started to make out. We were kissing and caressing when she reached down and grabbed my dong. It was highly unpleasurable because she was squeezing it so hard. We had to be quiet, and for some reason I just let her keep doing it until it became very painful. It kind of took something away from the entire experience. I also had the wateriest of all diarrheas known to mankind. Yes. Okay. June 26th. I've got to stop lying. It's a sickness. I told Ellen that I modeled in a Doubleman commercial when I was little. She asked if I'd ever been in Paris, and I said yes. Why would I lie about that? I told Stacy, who's looking really foxy, I got to play. I had the opportunity to play racquetball with Sting and the Police. They were fucking maniacs. I told her, I must control my lying because one day I will be an important diplomat or maybe a politician. Milton, who was our route leader, he came into our town and asked me to go bathe with him in the river. I couldn't believe it when he asked me if it felt good when I masturbated. He said, having sex with a man is basically the same thing. A man knows just the right way to touch you. I said, yeah, I think we should be getting back now. But I must admit that what he said made sense since Lori almost yanked off my dong. July 10th. The project director had a group meeting. He found out about the drinking incident. Nothing would happen if we told him how much we drank. But something deep inside me told me to lie. I said I had a half a beer at lunch and felt very sorry. I think it was a Jewish Holocaust survival instinct. Since the 8 Gentiles got sent home and the 1 Jew, me, got to stay. So I thought I had gotten through the drinking incident unscathed and that I was still in the running for the Amigo of the Year award. But then the amigos who got sent home, they told Amigos headquarters in Houston that I'd lied about my alcohol intake. But I somehow convinced the staff to let me stay by promising to beat all previous latrine building records. But then the god of Montezuma had some more revenge. July 27th. I was awake after a sleepless and gaseous night. We reached the truck and piled in with 100 other people. 2 hours into the drive, I got these terrible stomach cramps. I could barely stand. They felt like they could just be gas, so I tried farting, but they weren't gas at all. I wasn't wearing any underwear, so I could feel the diarrhea go down my leg. It made it all the way into my shoe. Pam said, Jesus, it smells like shit in here. But I didn't fess up. When I got more pains, I figured, what the hell, and let loose some more. It was already light out, and all the people were just staring. So I kept looking at a man with a mustache standing next to me and made a face like he was the one who was smelling so bad. I know this was not very culturally sensitive. So yes, I had contracted dysentery. It was so bad, in fact, and I grew so weak that the locals strapped me to a donkey and sent me 4 hours to the nearest health clinic. When I returned home to the States, emaciated, I wondered if I'd done enough to achieve my summer's long goal. October 31st. Josh Weston won the Amigo of the Year award. That fucking piece of shit. I guess he started some bullshit library in his town in Costa Rica. I could have done that in 2 seconds. He wrote a letter supposedly from the family he stayed with talking about how amazing he was, and he had them sign it and mail it. I'm going to write an anonymous letter exposing his lies. Except for my drinking violation, I'm 10 million times the amigo he'll ever be. That fucking shit fuck liar. Thank you very much.
That was Steve Sacks reading aloud his childhood writings with no embellishing, no exaggerating, just God-given awkwardness on stage at Mortified in Brooklyn at Littlefield. Stick around, there's more to this story as we chat with today's reader in our post-mortem, Fide. We caught up with Steve and found out that despite losing out on the Amigo of the Year award, his time in Mexico had changed him.
I came back, you know, I was one of those over-identifiers where, you know, nobody could understand my experience in Mexico, and everybody was so focused on their insignificant lives and they weren't really helping anyone, and I was. I definitely clung to that identity and was nauseating for people.
Steve's desire to identify as Latino extended into language as well.
I was over-rolling my R's, which made me sound like a pretentious dumbass. So I would say, you know, qué lindo perro, which sounds like, what a nice dog, what a nice dog.
Once, as a teenager, Steve snuck into a bar using a fake ID and tried to pass himself off as a Latino.
I went up to these people and I said, you know, I was Esteban from Ecuador. You know, I was far more gregarious than I could be in English, to the point where, you know, everybody's like, I love Esteban, I love him.
Amazingly, they bought his act. But then...
The next day, I remember, I was with my brother, and we ran into the people from the bar, and they're all yelling, Esteban, Esteban, we love this guy, Esteban. And my brother's like, what the hell? What did you do? You need to be put away. Like, there's something wrong with you.
Thankfully, this was just an immature phase. Steve kept going back to Latin America and working with the Amigos every summer. Eventually, he found the sense of purpose he had been searching for.
After college, I moved to Ecuador and I lived there for 12 years, and I started the first certified organic farm there. Really affected pretty much everything in my life.
Steve still goes back to Latin America every year to work with a nonprofit project that his son developed. He's also assured us his days of becoming an over-identifier are behind him. So, ladies, rest easy. If you find yourself at a bar next to someone claiming to be Esteban from Ecuador, it probably is Esteban from Ecuador. To share the shame, follow us on Facebook or Twitter, or visit GetMortified.com to learn more about Mortified stage shows, books, films, and beyond. Click participate, and who knows, maybe you'll appear on a future episode of the series. The Mortified podcast is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, made possible with the support from the Knight Foundation and MailChimp, who celebrate creativity, chaos, and teamwork. Of course, if your organization is interested in supporting this podcast too, please email sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Our podcast production team for this episode includes Gina Delvac, Pierce Priscelli, Kathy Tu, Dave Nadelberg, and myself, Neil Catcher. Music by Gordon Bash, Alex Burke, Adam Smith, and Snake Snake Snakes. Additional thanks to Jared Bogley, Kate Frolick, Marina Schifrin, Graham Fuchs, Littlefield, Jenny Ruth Myers, Shay DeGrandis, and all the dedicated Mortified Live producers whose work make the stage show possible. Until next time, we remind you that we are freaks, we are fragile, and we all survived.